Well, hey, church, glad to see you guys this morning. And before we get rolling this morning, I want to give you guys a quick update on the new building. That building should be done in like 2 weeks, all right, which is crazy. And so we'll be able to move in at least part of that we'll be able to move in, and that will help us on Sunday mornings. The indoor playground that's going in, that will actually be assembled throughout the month of November. And so that we're calling the Hangar Play Space. And again, that's our plan is we're going to open up that to the community during certain hours of the week. And our goal is that kids will mingle with each other. Our kids and kids that aren't here will be together and hang out with each other and play with each other. And then also for us as parents and grandparents, as we bring our kids and our grandkids, that we'd be able to mingle with people from outside these walls as well. And so we're excited about that. And right now, the playground, which was is built in Wales, okay, in the UK, right now is in the middle of the Atlantic heading this way, all right, which is kind of weird to think about. And so it's coming to the New York port, and which we almost had an issue with that strike going on. They weren't going to send it. But we're good with that for now. And so then it'll be put on a train, it'll head to Cleveland, and then from Cleveland, it'll be put on a truck, and it's going to head here, okay? So that's how it comes in containers, and so we're excited about that. Along with that, what we'll be able to actually use even sooner during the month of November is we'll have two new classrooms that we'll be able to use, which if you are a parent in here, you know, if you've been back there, we desperately need space. We got kids meeting everywhere, hallway. I mean, there's like kids all over the place, which is cool, all right, which is good. That's what we want, we need space. And so we're getting that space. But along with that space, we're able to split our kids up a little bit more. We also need help. And I know a lot of you guys, as I've talked to you, you have expressed to me that, hey, you know, you've been looking for ways to try to like get involved here at Grace, and that's awesome. This is what you should do. You should serve your church in some capacity. Just throwing this out there, that's really probably the area that we need the most is help within our children's ministry, and it's like fun, okay? Like for me, as a kid growing up in church, actually a kid growing up in this church at our Fremont campus, some of the people who made the biggest impact on my life were my Sunday school teachers, okay? It's just having another adult in my life besides my parents that I could look up to, specifically even spiritually. I mean, there's a good chance that I wouldn't be here standing here today if it wasn't for some of them. And so I'm just saying you could be that in kids' lives here in our own community. And so I just want to throw that out there, that it's good for you to get involved that way. And so we specifically need help, and we want to share the truth and the love of Jesus to as many kids as we possibly can, but we can't do that without you, okay? So that's just the reality of it. And so if that's something that you're interested in, or maybe not even interested in, but you're like, I've guilted you enough, and you're like, okay, I'll do it, you know. If you want to be involved in any capacity, you could go to the information center. We'll get you signed up there. You could go talk to Toria over at the kids desk. She'll be able to answer any question that you might have. You don't even have to teach. We have more than one person in the classrooms and stuff. And so it's just a really good thing, and it's really impactful thing for us to do. So throwing that out that way, do you guys feel guilty enough? Oh, a laugh. Okay, that's not good. All right. All right, just throwing that out there. It's good for you, and it's good for our kids. So, okay, cool. You ready to get started? Yeah. All right. I got a question for you. Kind of kick us off this morning. How many of you have people in your life that you look at them, or you just simply from knowing them, that they're just like different? You know what I'm saying? I don't know how to say it in a nice way. Like, they're just different, okay? Don't look at them. Don't poke at them. I see some of that going on. I saw that. They're just different. Like, it's not even, you can't even tell, like, on the outside. It's just the more you get to know them, the more different you see that they are. Like, they just have to do things differently than just ordinary people. And for a lot of those things, you've noticed in their life, and you're just like, there's not even really a good reason that you do it this way. You know what I mean? I got this friend I don't know why this is, he just has to be different in some of these areas. One of the things that he does is he has to back into a parking spot. Any of you guys do that? All right, like every time? Okay, I don't understand that. I don't get it. All right, it takes longer, okay? And I get the takeoff afterwards is faster, you know, but it's frustrating when I'm like, you know, in the car with him or whatever, and he's taking his time. I'm like, I gotta go, you know? And here we are, taking our time, backing up, and then if it's not straight, then it's like you gotta, you know, adjust and then try to back up again. Although he's pretty good at it because he does it all the time. But even when the parking lot is empty, he has to back up into a spot. I don't get it, okay? Same guy, all right, same friend. Whenever you decide a time to meet, like, hey, we're gonna meet at 7 o'clock, okay? He changes it to like 7:08. All right, why? I don't know. All right, there's no good reason. Or 7:03, okay? He never does it like on the hour or anything like that. And so he does that, all right? That's different. He also leaves the plastic film on all of his electronics and his appliances. You know what I'm talking about? Any of you guys? Do people leave that on? To me, one of the most satisfying things in life is peeling that off. You know what I mean? It's like perfect. You get what I'm saying? All right, so what he does is he leaves the film on anything new that he buys, and he leaves it on there as long as he possibly can, even when it starts like peeling off the edges on its own, and it looks terrible, and he leaves it on there because he knows in 3 years he could peel that off and he'll have like a brand new TV, you know, and so even though it's 3 years old. And so he does that. Another weird thing, and it's all one person, but another weird thing that this guy does is when he buys shoes at the store, he never unties the knot that's already there, okay? So for him, he's going, this is a factory knot, okay? This knot's never gonna get any better. And so he leaves the knot on his shoes. And so he has shoes that he's been wearing for like 2 years, and he still hasn't untied the knot that the factory knotted it in, okay? We can all agree that's weird, right? Okay, all right. The last thing that he does, this has to do with his computer specifically, that I've noticed throughout the years, is that, you know, the like toolbar at the bottom of your computer, okay? He doesn't have it at the bottom. Why? Because apparently you can move those. Nobody knows about that. And so he has his on the side of his computer, like of his desktop, okay? I find that kind of annoying. And then even this week, I was hanging out with him, and I was using something on his computer, and I was messing around with his mouse, and I was clicking and nothing was happening because he has it set on left click, or no, right click is actually the left click. He has his clicks messed up, okay, that he does for no reason. And I'm standing there this week and I'm just like, Mike, why? Why? Why are you like this? You know, that's weird. Can we all agree on that? Okay, he's just a different guy and you all know him. Yeah, it's a problem. See, here's the deal, all right? God calls us as Christians to be different. Not necessarily Mike different, but just in general, to be different than the world around us. And so today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to begin looking at the life of a man who lived 2,629 years ago or so, a guy who we know, who maybe we've known from Sunday school ever since we were really little, a guy named Daniel. And so for the next few weeks, next month and a half or so, as our nation gears up for this election, and as the media and just everything is happening, and as we live through the consequences and the chaos that comes with that, no matter which side wins, here's the deal. We should be asking a question. And the question we should be asking is, how does a God follower navigate secular culture and political chaos? All right, how does God want me to live during this season that we are all in? How do I, as a believer, when my boss isn't interested and my professor is completely against God and my friends are always pulling me in another direction and our government leaders and our president doesn't value the things that I value, and when the world is in opposition to the way of life that God has called us to live, how am I supposed to do this? Like, how do I do this? And so we're not the first people, I don't think, to ask this question. In fact, I bet that Daniel asked this question all throughout his entire life, and so that's what we're going to be looking at. Now, this morning, it's going to be a little complicated in the fact that we're going to go through some history, okay? We're going to kind of set the stage for exactly what's going on in the world at the time that Daniel is living. We're going to talk about the world that he was living in, and so you're going to have to, like, focus in, okay? You with me on this before we get rolling? Okay. All right, let's start off reading Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. This is what he says. He says, in the third year, sets the stage. In the third year of the reign of King Jehoiakim of Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came to Jerusalem and laid siege to it. Now, a quick history lesson. This is going to set, again, the stage for the entire story of Daniel for the next, 6 weeks or so. And we're going to back up before this. Let's back up to the time of King David, okay? Most of us, we've heard of King David, okay? We actually did a whole series a year ago on King David, so I hope so. But David became king in about 1010 BC, okay? That's kind of, just to kind of put a year on that. And David, he reigned for about 40 years in Israel. Israel at the time is in the same place that Israel is today. So that part maybe you have in your mind. You can kind of picture where that is in the world. And so King David reigned. He was a good king. He reigned for about 40 years. And he kind of built up this nation, Israel. And when King David died, his son Solomon took over. And Solomon became king. And this is really where the height of the Israel, let's call it even maybe a small empire, hit its max. And so when King Solomon, when he was in charge, I mean, he was a builder. He was extremely wise. I mean, he was a good guy. He didn't follow God throughout his entire life. And so there's some issues with that. But he came back to God in the end. And Israel became rich. And Israel was extremely blessed on the way that they lived their life. Now, after King Solomon ends up dying, he reigned for about 40 years, just like his dad. And when Solomon dies, his son takes over and he becomes king. But his son is not as good of a king as King Solomon. And his son is kind of harsh and nobody wants to be friends with him. You know people like that? Okay? That's King Solomon's son. And so the nation comes before King Solomon's son. And basically, half the nation says, we don't want you to be our king. And so we're leaving. We're going to go start our own thing. And so the nation of Israel actually splits in half. You got a northern kingdom and you got a southern kingdom. The northern kingdom, they retain the name Israel, but they set up a new capital city and they built a new capital city that was known as Samaria. And then the southern kingdom, they took on the name Judah, all right, and they retained the old capital, which was Jerusalem. Does that make sense? Okay, you got two kingdoms here. Now, Israel in the north, they're all Israelites, by the way. They're all Jewish people. But Israel, the name Israel, in the north, that northern kingdom, they go downhill fast, all right? Things are not good. Every single king that they have that reigns over the northern kingdom, they all refuse to follow God, and they are all messed up, and they are all evil. But God is patient with them, and God is patient with that kingdom. And so he waits, he gives them 208 years to try to repent. And during that time, he sends prophet after prophet after prophet, guys that maybe you've heard of before, guys like Elijah and guys like Elisha and Amos and Jonah and Hosea and all these guys. And very, 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 very few of those people actually end up listening, and none of the kings listen. And so after 200 years, God allows this new world empire that has appeared kind of in the east at this time, this world empire called Assyria, to conquer Israel, the northern kingdom, and basically wipes the northern kingdom off the map. This happens in 722 BC, okay? Now, Judah in the south, all right, things are going a little bit better for them. They have some good kings. They have some bad kings. And because of that, all right, God blesses them, from time to time when their good kings are reigning. And God protects Judah from Assyria because at that time they had a good king. His name was King Hezekiah that God protected them from. And so Assyria, they don't take over Judah. It's a big thing. You can read about it in the Old Testament. And God protects them. He protects the nation of Judah for about 120 more years after the northern kingdom has fallen until the last good king. It's this guy named Josiah is ruling over Judah. Now, Josiah, during his reign, this is when Daniel grew up, okay? Daniel grew up during Josiah's reign. But eventually, Josiah dies unexpectedly in battle with a pharaoh called Necho from Egypt. And when that happens, things are a mess within Judah. All right, the common people that kind of take over, and they appoint Josiah's son named Jehoahaz. Okay, I get it, tough name. All right, Jehoahaz as king. Jehoahaz is an evil king. He has nothing to do with God. He doesn't want anything to do with God. And he only reigns for about 3 months. Because in 3 months, Pharaoh Necho comes back through. He stops in the land of Egypt, or he stops in the land of Judah. And basically, he's like, who's this guy? All right, I didn't say you could be king. I conquered you people. And so I'm the one who gets to choose the king. And so he has Jehoahaz arrested and shackled. And he takes Jehoahaz as prisoner. And he puts Jehoahaz's older brother, Jehoiakim, okay, a little complicated, as king over Judah. And Jehoiakim, who's right here, Jehoiakim is also an evil king. During this time, God sends a prophet specifically. He sends several prophets, but specifically the prophet Jeremiah. We have his works in the book of Jeremiah in the Old Testament. And Jeremiah warns the people over and over and over and over again that they need to come back to God, that God, if they didn't change their ways, that God would kick his people out of the promised land, and basically nobody listens. And so 3 years later, there's a nation rising in the east, a nation that will challenge the Assyrians. In fact, they defeat Assyria. They're the new kid on the block when it comes to world empires, and this nation is called Babylon. And in 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar, who's the king of Babylon, he defeats Pharaoh Necho, and then he comes down and he occupies Judah and he completely surrounds Jerusalem. And so I want you to picture this. You got this teenage Daniel, right? And his family are inside Jerusalem. They're completely surrounded by the most powerful army on the planet, and no one knows how it's going to end. And so that's what happens. And so the Lord, Daniel says, handed King Jehoiakim of Judah over to Nebuchadnezzar. Notice, by the way, there is no battle, right? There is no big fight here for Jerusalem, all right? This isn't that God loses a fight. It's not that the Babylonian army, which, by the way, again, was the greatest the world had ever seen, all right? It wasn't that they were more powerful than God. It wasn't that God couldn't protect him if he wanted to. It wasn't that, oh, man, like God tried, but he was just defeated, all right? That's not what it was, all right? This was a judgment that God allowed, right, to happen to his people, because Israel, they had chased after fake gods and they had copied the nations that were all around them. And so God had sent prophets after prophet after prophets warning them, warning after warning after warning, saying, hey, here's the deal. You guys, I will have to punish you. I don't want to punish you, but I love you. Remember, God punishes those that he loves. He says, I will have to punish you. You don't like the path. You're not going to like the path that you're going down. This is not what you need. You need to come back to me. But they did. And so he did. And he uses Babylon to kick them out of the land that he gave them. And God allows this to happen to get his people's attention. And he does not lose the fight. And so Nebuchadnezzar, he shows up with his army. And he shows up to Jerusalem and he completely surrounds this huge city. And there is no hope. In fact, there's not even a fight. Nebuchadnezzar, he just walks right in. He kind of waltzes into Jerusalem and he says, here's the deal. I'm in charge now. I own you now. And he takes control of Jerusalem, and then he takes stuff from the temple. He says he took some of the vessels from the house of God, and he carried them to the land of Babylon, to the house of his God, and he put the vessels in the treasury of his God, which is going to show up later on in the story many weeks from now. Basically, these were tools that were used to worship God in his temple. And Nebuchadnezzar, he takes stuff from God's temple, which was in Jerusalem, and he puts it in his God's temple. Basically, it's significant. It's like it's a sign of saying, hey, my gods beat your God. All right, my gods are more powerful than your gods. Your God is defeated, and so we got his stuff in the treasury of my gods. And not only that, but check this out, but the king ordered that Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the Israelites from the royal family and from the nobility. Actually, it's more like kidnap, okay? And these guys were young men, right? Without any physical defect, they were good-looking and suitable for instruction in all wisdom. So, by the way, if you're a middle school girl, okay, in here, I'm just throwing this out there. These guys are about 14, 15 years old. So what's that, like eighth grade? And they're no physical defect, and they were good-looking. So code word for you, they were hot. Okay, let's just put things into perspective for that group of people, okay? So these guys are good looking, all right? They were like the quarterback of the team, all right? They were the best of the best. Not only were they just good looking, but they were also suitable for instruction in all wisdom. They were smart, okay? They were knowledgeable. They were perceptive. Do you know any middle schoolers like this, by the way, okay? They were perceptive, they were capable of serving in the king's palace, and he was to teach them the Chaldean language and literature. And so the king assigned them daily provisions from the royal food and from the wine that he drank, and they were to be trained for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to attend the king. And so among them, from the Judahites, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. All right, so here we got these four guys. Nebuchadnezzar, he comes in. He defeats their city without really even having a big fight, because the city just crumbles before him and just kind of, they surrender. And Nebuchadnezzar takes the best and the brightest, and Daniel and his three friends were picked. Why? Because they were the best and they were the brightest. These guys were like the Ivy League, man. All right, these guys were like the five-star recruit. And that's just kind of how the Babylonians did it. See, the Babylonians, they were much, much different than the previous world empire, the Assyrians, okay, who took out the northern kingdom of Israel. Remember them? Okay? All right, they were much, much different. The Assyrians were brutal people. In fact, you remember the story of Jonah? Remember, like, all the way back to Sunday school? All right, we're doing Daniel and Jonah. Here we go. All right, remember Jonah all the way back in Sunday school where God goes to Jonah, who's a prophet, and he says, hey, this is what I want you to do. I want you to carry a message to Nineveh. All right, Nineveh, by the way, was the capital city of Assyria. And I want you to go and I want you to tell them that I see what they're doing and I don't like it and that I'm going to come and I'm going to punish them all. Okay? And so I want you to warn them. Maybe they will change their ways. And Jonah, in his mind, he was just like, no way, God. I don't want to go to them. Why? Because they don't deserve a warning. You should just punish them now because these guys are brutal. They're messed up. They're evil. Like, God, have you heard about the things that I've done? Remember what Jonah does? He runs the opposite way. See, the Assyrians, when they would conquer a city, they would take everything that has value, right? If anything had value, they would take it, right? They would take the kids, all the kids in the city. And if they survived the attack, they would take all the kids and they would turn them all into slaves. They would hook the kids through their noses with a hook, and then they would string them to the next kid, and they would have just long, 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 long lines that they would make them walk all the way back to Nineveh, right, with these kids as slaves with hooks in their noses to remind them, of who they are now. They would rape all the women when they attacked the city, and then they would peel the skin off all the men alive, okay? Not a great day when the Assyrians took over your town or your city. And so those were the Assyrians. They were known for being brutal. They would pile up mountains of heads of people that they would behead after they would skin you alive. And it was just a sign saying, oh yeah, the Assyrians were here, all right? And so the Babylonians were not the same. The Babylonians were a lot more, like, sophisticated, if that makes sense. Sure, they would go in when they conquered a city and they would kill most of the people. They just wouldn't do it as ruthlessly, right? And people appreciated that. They would take the kids as slaves like the Assyrians would, but they would not hook them through their nose. Instead, they would take them 900 miles to the city of Babylon, which at this point in the history of the world was the largest and greatest city in the world. And they would hope that the kids would get hooked on how beautiful and how impressive the city was. Because the Babylonians, they knew that once they got you to Babylon, you wouldn't want to leave. And so as Daniel and his friends got to Babylon, as they're walking through the streets and they're seeing towers and they're seeing huge walls and they're seeing everything that's going around them, as they're wide-eyed and mesmerized by the city that's around them, the Babylonians are telling them, they're saying, hey, you get to live here. Like, check it out. All right, check out all we have to offer. Check out how beautiful the city. You get to eat our food. You get to wear our clothes. You get to worship our gods. You get to do what we do. You are one of us, and it's awesome being us. All right, like, we get to rule. You get to help us rule the world. All right, take a look around. Actually, this week I was looking, I was reading from an ancient historian, this dude named Herodotus, and he was describing Babylon, and he lived just a couple hundred years after. But he was describing Babylon, which, by the way, was located in modern Iraq. And he described Babylon. It was 196 square miles, okay? That's a big city, okay? That's like 2.5 Clevelands, just to put things into perspective. And so so it was a huge, huge city, ancient city. It had a wall around the entire city. The wall itself was 311 feet tall, okay? Super tall. And it was 87 feet thick. In fact, the wall was so thick that they would take chariots around the wall, all right? You could ride in chariots around the wall. And then the wall around the palace was 420 feet tall. And so just to put things into perspective, like, you know, the dragster at Cedar Point that was supposed to open this year and never did, I don't know, you know, just sits there. All right, that was as tall as the wall around the palace of Babylon. I mean, this is huge. It's so difficult for us to even imagine what this could have possibly looked like. Not only that, but the city was built on the Euphrates River, and they actually diverted part of the river to go through the city, and it just kind of meandered around the city, and they had like river walks around it and made it super beautiful. Not only that, but one of the seven wonders of the ancient world was actually located within Babylon, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, if you've heard of that, right? Those were located in Babylon, and so Babylon was known for being beautiful, and it was known for being unbelievable architecturally, and it was known for being rich. And so compared to anywhere else at the time, I mean, Babylon was like a paradise. And so they marched Daniel and his friends through the city. It's almost like they're dangling a carrot in front of their faces saying, hey, you need to conform. You need to be one of us. Now, for a lot of us, if you grew up in church, all right, if you grew up in the 90s, I think a lot of us, we naturally think of like VeggieTales and stuff. We think Daniel and the Lion's Den. All right, let's not think that, okay? All right. Or maybe if you're, you know, older than that, you think of like flannel graph, you know, like thing. I don't even know how that worked, but flannel graph thing, like on the board in Sunday school. I think for a lot of us as church people and growing up in church, I think it's a lot of times it's easy for us to kind of view Daniel as like a fairy tale, you know, just kind of how we grew up. But Daniel was a real kid who lived during a real time and who had to face real problems. And so if you have teenage sons, like eighth graders, right, 14, 15 years old, I'm just saying, right, he may have been a lot like your kid. Only Daniel had seen so much more. He had seen his country defeated. Maybe he had seen his family killed, right? His city and home had been destroyed, right? God's temple had been completely disrespected. He had been taken to a foreign country. He was forced to work for a ruthless leader. Not only that, and I think probably the worst thing, is Daniel and his friends were probably made eunuchs, okay? You know, so that means like get out the shears and sorry, buddy, you know. I don't care how old you are for a 14-year-old kid. Like, that's a bad day. We can all agree on that. Yeah. All the men in here say, yeah, okay? Jeez. That's a bad day, man, all right? Not only that, but think about it. Think of the consequences besides how horrible that would be, all right? Think of the consequences. He has to deal with the reality of he's never going to have kids on his own, right? This, and he's only 14, like this is a terrible thing. And then he has a 3-year indoctrination program where they're going to re-educate him and try to teach him to think their way. And they've taken everything away from these kids. They've taken everything away from these kids except for their names. And then he says the chief eunuch gave them new names. All right, they even take those. They're trying to take their identities as he gave to them, all right, Belshazzar to Daniel, Shadrach to Hananiah, Meshach to Mishael, and Abednego to Azariah. See, part of the re-education program that the Babylonians did, and they were very, very smart in this, in the sense that they wanted to change your identity. Right? They would change your home, they would change your environment, they would change your food, they would change your religion, they would change your language, and they would even change your name. And each one of their names had different meanings, then they all had to deal with worshiping the Babylonian fake gods. And so now for Daniel and his friends, every time someone says their name, man, it's just a reminder of what they've lost. Some of you guys, maybe you feel like you've been put into a difficult environment with work or school or whatever to be a Christian. Just throwing this out there, it's just a guess, maybe kind of like a hunch. I'm guessing these 14-year-olds have you beat. But it says Daniel determined that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. See, can I just point this out? Culture is always trying to tell you who you are. It always does. Right, we live in a world that tries to label you. Right, we live in a world that says either you are the oppressed or you are the oppressor. We live in a world that labels us. I mean, the media around us, they label us by our skin color, all right, by our ethnicity, by our social status, by the job that we do, by our academic status, okay, what you've achieved academically. And right now, during this election cycle, I mean, the world around us wants to label us red or blue. See, the world tries to label us by the things that we've done. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Maybe for you, it's some like award that you've won, or you're the person that always wins the awards, or you built this company, or you're that community leader. Or maybe for you, the world wants to label you by something that you've done and it was wrong. The world labels you as an adulterer, a homewrecker, an oppressor, or an addict. That's just what you are. See, the world wants to tell us who we are and what we are. But as Christians, our identity is not found in our past, and it's not found in what we do. It's found in what Jesus did. See, we are his people, not people of the world. And as I look back on Daniel, it's just like, dude, the world has not changed over 2,600 years. The world was doing to him what the world still tries to do to us, always trying to entice us, always trying to lure us, always trying to squeeze us into the world's mold. And for us, the question that we have to decide is will you conform to this world, or will you conform to the way that Jesus has told us to live? Those are really the only two options. I remember many years ago, I was young, newly married, didn't have much money, and I had bought a car. I bought this car for like $3,000, okay? So not that much money. And so I'm going to the it's like a private sale. I'm going to the title office with the guy. He's going to sign it over to me. And we're in the parking lot. We're walking up, and the guy's like, okay, here's the deal. You know, and I'm like a kid, you know, and he's like, I'm going to write on the title, I'm going to say that I sold it to you for, I think it was like $500. I'm going to say that I sold it to you for $500, and then you don't have to pay taxes on the full $3,000, okay? And so I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, I hate paying taxes, you know? Like, any of you guys with, like, taxes are just not my, like, I write that check each year. Part of it is I have to write my own check because I'm considered self-employed, and so I'm like, you know, it's just like, eats at my soul, and it was back then too. And so I'm just like, that sounds good, you know. But as he's looking at me, and I have to answer him, I'm just like, man, I hate. You know, I have all these things going through my head. I'm like, I hate paying taxes, and they're gonna waste it anyway, and give it. You know, like it's better off it stays with me. This will save me a few $100. Like that sounds pretty good. And I'm thinking to myself, but then I'm like, but it's wrong. You know, but it's a lie. Like, it's not true. But it was be him that's doing it. It's not technically me. And so, you know, that's kind of on him, right? Like, you know, but then I'm like, but he's asking me. And so how can I say yes? And I remember standing there in the parking lot with him as he's like waiting for my answer. And I'm just like, just write $3,000. I'll pay the extra tax. And I remember him looking at me. He's just like, what? What? I'm trying to do you a favor. I'm like, I know. And I appreciate that. You know, but I'm just like, but it's just not right. You know, I'm like, you know, mumbling, just do it, stop, you know. And it's just, it's things like that that kind of pop up in our life where the world's just like, well, yeah, of course you're going to do it this way. But as Christians, we are to be different in the fact that we're just like, but it's not right. But it's not honoring. We have a choice, just like Daniel had a choice. For Daniel here, I mean, for him, it was like, oh, you want to re-educate me, okay. All right, you want me to learn the Babylonian language and the Babylonian culture? Okay, you want me to work for the government, who, by the way, just kidnapped me and destroyed my home? I can do that. You want me to give you my allegiance to your God and to your values? No. That's where I draw the line. I can't. And he's saying he determined, right, meaning he made the decision that he would not do it. He was going to do the right thing even when the world was against him. Now, the question is, what did this look like? Okay, see, some of us, let's be honest with ourselves, right? Like, when we're faced with a similar decision between doing life the world's way or doing life God's way, some of us, or even maybe even a lot of us, we do the right thing, okay? We choose the right choice, but we make a big deal about it. And we're kind of jerks about it sometimes, right? Let's just be honest with ourselves, right? Like, sometimes we get on Facebook and we post this big old long post, and we're like, I'm making my stand. You know, what I'm saying is true, and it's true. The things that you might be saying might actually be true, but you're not winning anybody to your side. What you're doing is you're actually causing an argument and just starting a fight. That's not helping anything, right? You might be doing the right thing, but you're a jerk about it, right? It might be at work where your boss is trying to get you to do something that you just don't feel like is morally right, and you might even be correct in that, and your boss might be wrong. But what you do is you create this big old scene in the office or wherever, and you're just causing all this problems. You're pointing the finger at your boss saying, see, you know, I can't be like you. Or maybe one of your friends or somebody around you, they just say something that's just that you completely disagree with. And what they say might be completely wrong, and what you think might be completely right, but what you do is you let them know, right? You're just like, wow, what you said, and you act like they're, you know, like, I can't believe you would believe that, you know, I can't believe you would think that, you're completely wrong. See, what I've noticed is that even when we make the right decision, for a lot of us, it is easy for us to develop an attitude of, I'm better than you, because I don't do the things you do. And I don't say the things you say, and I don't think the way that you think. See, unfortunately, a lot of Christians have this reputation. Can I just point this out? That's not what Daniel does. He doesn't make a scene. He doesn't make a big protest. He's not out picketing with signs saying, I'm not going to eat this, I'm not going to do this. No, what Daniel decides in his heart is he's like, here's the deal. All right? He's logical in the sense of he's like, I have to honor the Lord. But I don't want to be a jerk about it. And so he kindly and he respectfully asks permission from the chief eunuch to not defile himself. And God, check this out, granted Daniel kindness and compassion from the chief eunuch. By the way, who did it? Who's working behind the scenes? It's God. He says, yet he said to Daniel, he says, I fear my Lord the king. Who assigned your food and your drink, meaning he's saying, hey, Nebuchadnezzar got to pick out what you eat and what you drink. And so if I give you something else, I'm actually directly disobeying him. And what if he sees your face is looking thinner than your other men your age? He says, you would endanger my life with the king. And so here's this guy. He hears Daniel's request. And this guy in charge, he's like, okay, look, kid. I appreciate your devotion to your God. Right, that sounds pretty good, but I don't think you understand the way things work around here. If you don't eat the good food and you get all like weak and pitiful looking and stuff, you know, then I'm the one who gets, check this out, killed. All right, they will kill me if you even just look weaker because I've gone against the king. And so Daniel, at first try, he gets completely rejected, right, by this guy. This guy's like, no, can't do that. Here's the reason. It's a pretty good reason, by the way. I think we can all agree. He's like, I might die because of you. And so Daniel, he comes up with a plan. He says, hey, what about this? And he tries again. And by the way, he's still not a jerk about it, okay? That's what he says. He says, what about this? Why don't you test your servants for like 10 days? All right, let's do 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. By the way, I think we can all agree, nobody who's in charge of feeding a group of people like it when different people demand different food, right? Like moms, where you at? Okay? Like isn't that annoying? I remember it's like every trip I would take with students, because I did student ministry for 10 years. Every trip I would take with high school kids, all right? If we needed to stop at a fast food restaurant or something, okay, we'd stop there. We'd stop at like a Wendy's, okay? And we'd stop there. And no matter what, all right, there would always be like 3 to 4 girls, you know, it's like a little pack, and they were like in it, and they're like, we're gonna die together. And they'd be like, hey, we don't like Wendy's. And I'm like, you don't like Wendy's? What? It's Ohio company. Like, why would you not? Like, it's burgers and fries. It's the best, you know? And so there would always be these girls that would be like, oh, well, I don't want to eat Wendy's, and I just can't do it. And, I'm like, well, they have more than burgers. They got, like, Frosties and chili and, you know, like, all the other stuff. And I'm like, and they're like, no, we can't do it. And I'm like, you have a whole restaurant at your disposal, and you're saying you can't eat anything that they could possibly come up with? And then it would always end this way. No, I will puke. If that comes near me, I will not do it. I will puke. And they'd be like, well, you know, can we just go to Taco Bell or something? You know, like it would always be Taco Bell. You know, and I'm just like, Taco Bell is like way worse than what is going on here? You know? That's what Daniel's asking for. He's like, hey, I would like you to feed me some different food. It'll be make your job a little bit harder and just as a test. But the guy, he's like, okay. And Daniel says, after the 10 days, what you could do is you can examine our appearance and the appearance of the young men who are actually eating the king's food, the other guys from all the other countries, and deal with your servants based on what you see. Then you can decide. And so the guy agreed with him about this, and he tested them for the 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, they actually looked better and healthier than all the young men from all the other countries who were eating the king's food. And so the guard continued to remove their food and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. By the way, I just want to throw this out. This is not an argument for a vegetarian diet, okay? Remember, just throwing this out there, I've had people tell me that before. They're like, well, you know, Daniel. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, what about all throughout the Bible where they were eating meat, okay? In fact, even in the temple, God commanded the Jews to like barbecue meat at the temple, which I think is awesome. So I eat meat like all good Christians do, okay? And just throwing this out there. In fact, I view this as a miracle that they were healthy looking just by eating plant, okay? I'm impressed with this. Obviously, that's a miracle from God, you know? This is not a biblical mandate for essential oils, okay? Let's throw that out there. All right, this had more to do with the Old Testament Jewish dietary laws that God had given them, and so that God actually gave or did away with after Jesus came. So we're no longer under this, which is good, thankfully, okay? So think about this, though. Here's this 14 to 15-year-old kid. He's just trying to live the way that God has called him to live, and God rewards him for it. By the way, when you commit to doing things God's way, many times, not every time because he doesn't owe you this, but many times he actually rewards us for it. And not only do they look better, and not only do they look healthier, but God gave these four young men knowledge and understanding in every kind of literature and wisdom. By the way, who gave them that? God. And so Daniel, he also understood visions and dreams of every kind, which is cool, okay? That's going to play later on in the story. And so at the end of this time, all right, the king had said to present them, the chief eunuch presented these four guys to Nebuchadnezzar, the most powerful man on the planet. And the king interviewed them, and he talked with them. And among all of them, no one was found equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, all four from Judah. And they began to attend the king. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding that the king consulted them about, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and the mediums in his entire kingdom. And so here's God. God rewards them. God blesses them for doing the right thing and for simply being different, just like we are to be different. Again, there is a difference between different and weird, okay? We all know weird Christians. Unfortunately, we just do, right? Like the aggressive Christian bumper stickers usually on their car, like you follow, you know, do you follow Jesus this closely? You know, stuff like that. And you're like, what's your point? Why? Or we've all seen those shirts, and some of you guys wear those shirts that are kind of cringy because they're trying to be funny, but they're like Jesus shirts, and you're like, dude, okay. Some of you guys, maybe you're newer Christians, you've met weird Christians, and they turned you off to Christianity as a whole, okay? That's what happens. And so I'm not saying be weird, all right? Don't be weird like Mike, okay? That's the lesson for today. But be different. And so in this world, because it's always pulling us away from God. And so what that means for you and what that means for us this week is we think, hey, I may go to school in a secular education environment and I may work in a secular workplace and I might live in an increasingly secular nation. I might pay taxes, unfortunately, to a secular country and I might work for a secular government in some capacity, but my allegiance, what we should be thinking is my allegiance is to you, God, not to them. And so God, sometimes I have to say no to others. And sometimes I have to determine in my heart that I have to do the right thing and I have to live different. By the way, can I just throw this out there? This is just logic, okay? But you cannot make a difference unless you are different. There is no way for you to make a difference unless you are different. The last verse in this chapter says, Daniel actually remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. So you read that and you're like, so what? What's King Cyrus got to do? Who's that guy? All right? The deal is King Cyrus is not a Babylonian. And we'll see how this all plays out. But just a reminder, especially within the season, that kingdoms rise and nations fall, but God remains the same. And so Daniel's not just going to survive Babylon. Daniel's going to change it. And so here we have these four 16-year-old God followers at this point, after the 3-year schooling, in the heart of an evil empire, serving the king who destroyed their nation, their family, their hopes, and dreams, serving the king who took everything that he could from them. And we will find throughout the next few weeks that it is possible to live in Babylon without Babylon living in you. Let's pray. God, we thank you for the story, and I'm personally excited about diving into this over the next few weeks. God, we ask that you help us, especially with what's going on in our nation right now and with elections and just all the chaos and just everything just seems to be a mess. God, we know that while our nation will change and nations rise and fall, you never do. And that you're something that we can anchor our life to. And God, help us as believers, help us to do that. God, we need your help. Help us to live our life this week specifically as we go into work or school tomorrow, whatever that might look like. All right, help us to be different. Not weird different, just different in a good way. And help us to live our life the way that you call us to. God, we ask you and we beg you for this in Jesus' name. Amen.